Lake Effect continues on 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. I'm Mitch Tyke.
And I'm Audrey Nowakowski. Steven Anderson is a Milwaukee area poet, but if you read his latest collection, it would give few clues to where he lives. The book, called The Dream Angel Plays the Cello, is filled with imagery that brings to mind places as diverse as the Caribbean, the desert, and Europe.
Anderson will read from his book at a launch event Monday evening at Boswell Book Company, but he joins us in the studio first and begins by sharing a poem from the new collection.
I'm going to read actually what is the first poem in the book. It's called Quest. Under the starry net cast above is the full-blown gladness of a Beethoven symphony on a midsummer's night. Here all is spoken in images at the juncture of the lucid and the luminous, where transcendence pulls one into infinity, where logic and pattern and ethereal matters duel under impermanent stars on slow burn, where the bioluminescent glow of fireflies catch and hold the imagination along with a quiet majesty of cedar and poplar trees, beech rows, mounds of moss, where nature is in her glory even through the surreal fog of afternoon. We are all made of star stuff. Let us not deceive ourselves. At least 10% of all stars have at least one habitable planet, dollops of rock in perpetual time slide, and we strive to content ourselves in the silky silence of our third planet from the sun, and amid nature in her glory, we inhale, we exhale.
Poet Steven Anderson reading Quest from his new collection, The Dream Angel Plays the Cello. Steven Anderson, welcome back to Lake Effect.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Is there anything you'd like to tell us about what inspired that poem?
That's one of the poems in the Dream Angel Plays the Cello is actually composed of three sections, and Quest is being the first poem in the book is part of section one. That's entitled Third Planet, which refers to our planet, of course. One notable thing about the poems in this first section is that even though they may be seemingly small with a kind of daily quotidian focus, seemingly mundane things in life, they do convey things that upon closer observation are really a little more significant and important. So while this poem does have some very observational aspects to it, it does get into the philosophical somewhat and to the deeper aspects of the content of the poem.
I think about photography and the ability to walk around even without a camera and sort of picture things through a lens. Does a poet or at least do you do the same thing? Are you viewing things, collecting images as you go through your days?
I do, yeah. Almost anything can inspire a poem. I can see a work of art. I can listen to music. Music can inspire something.
Does a poet have music in his head as he's writing? I guess I ask that in a general sense, but you really only have your own experience to call from.
Right. There's kind of a music that is generated in the process of doing the poem. And so you get the musicality in word sequence, sounds, a lot of the sonic features are a part of music, really. Yeah. So
you talk about finding something significant sometimes in the mundane. And I wonder, I mean, you know, there are days where, you know, you'll hear something and it'll strike you that it's a metaphor. And for the rest of the day, everything you hear, you decide is a metaphor. Does it work that way with poetry for you when you consider a shopping list or some other, you know, scrap of mundane life that strikes you as poetry? Does everything for the rest of the day strike you as poetry?
That's a good question. I don't think so, but I think for the moment in the process of doing the poem, certainly I'm all there with that, yes.
I mentioned the shopping list. There is a very literal shopping list that becomes a poem,
right.
And I guess I'm springing this on you now. But what can you tell us about why you wanted to include the list? I was greatly entertained by it, honestly.
Okay, great. Yeah, a lot of people I knew who were not really necessarily poets or that much into poetry. When they first saw that in print, it was published in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. And when they first saw that, they said, there were a couple of comments, that's not a poem, you know, because what their concept of a poem was something that was rhymed and very traditional, metered, you know, type of
The Midnight Ride of Paul Revere.
Right. But this poem, the list is really, I guess you might call it a prose poem in that it doesn't have end stops. It's written in paragraph form, basically. But it does have musicality, and it has questions that arise that are kind of important questions in life.
Well, and it seems to be the first half of it seems to be spoken in someone else's voice.
Yes. Whose name will remain unmentioned.
I don't know. Can we talk you into reading the list?
Oh, sure. Let me see if I can find it.
It seems a shame for us to talk about it without hearing it.
All right. The list. Now, dear, don't forget to pick up the following. 1 1/2 pounds of chicken pieces, 2 cans of coconut milk. So much rides on this ingredient. A small bottle of extra virgin olive oil, just virgin, will simply not do. 1 Vidalia onion, at least 2 garlic cloves, 2 packs of fresh pigeon peas. You'd be a dream if you could only find the Trinidadian one. 2 pimiento peppers, not jalapenos and not Scotch bonnet. 10 to 12 juicy limes and 1/2 pound of chorizo sausage. Sweetheart, I could have used these things about 2 hours ago, but do your best, okay? So after 53 minutes of store time and no less than a total of 5 stores, I arrive home with the above ingredients, panting as I lug the bags in, and she sighs in one of those, oh my God, I can't believe I forgot to tell you to pick up the 2 bottles of Trinidadian 10 cane rum. No sooner has she uttered the last word of that regrettable statement than I am walking to the corner liquor store, a neighborhood adventure, well, at least a walk with what probably will hold some cardiovascular benefit for this man of errands. I have always admired and loved to view the idiosyncratic architecture of our area.
The last line is really the denouement, I think, to that. But I have to ask, what was the recipe for?
It was a Trinidadian meal that the pigeon peas and rice and a very very typical kind of Trinidadian.
It sounded delicious.
It was. My wife is a great cook.
I was looking at. Honestly, as I was reading about the author, just to remind myself of all the different places you've been published and things that you've done, it mentioned a couple of times, it made a distinction noting that you are not a regional poet so much as one of more kind of general interest. And I guess, what's the distinction in your mind about what makes someone a regional poet versus any other label?
Well, I think there's some poets, for instance, in Wisconsin. And Wisconsin has produced, God knows why, many, many really, really talented poets. I think my life experience related to living abroad, I was a Peace Corps volunteer in Chile for 2 years and back during a very tumultuous period in Chile's history, and also at the same time a tumultuous period in the United States. But I think through my travels and my experiences abroad, I think all of that has really given me a wider eye in terms of what I choose to write about. Not that other poets who typically write regional stuff don't ever go to a global focus in any sense of the word, but for me, it's just kind of important. I just don't identify as someone who is exclusively a Wisconsin poet in that regard. Okay. In terms of the context and the amplitude of what I choose to write about.
Which is, of course, not to say that there might not be people around the world who might be interested in reading a Wisconsin poet.
Oh, sure, absolutely.
And their take on the things around them in Wisconsin.
Most certainly.
You just don't limit your subject matter to...
Right.
How do you know when a collection is a coherent one?
This particular collection, for instance, it does have a thematic arc, if you think about it. The three sections that I mentioned, the first is Third Planet, the second is called Destiny, and the third is called Futurama. The second section, Destiny, really has a lot of poems that focus on our dreams and our aspirations and our attempts to achieve them within the context of dealing with maybe the concepts of free will versus fate or destiny. And so all of the poems in that section basically have that kind of a focus. The third section is called Futurama, and it's really kind of a denouement of what has been focused on in the first two sections. So there's a thematic arc there. The denouement involves coming to terms with one's life circumstances as best we can, as we try to navigate through our daily existence in a meaningful way.
And that follows naturally from thinking about the idea of free will versus destiny.
Right.
Does writing these poems help you work these things through for yourself?
It does. I think it's a trying experience writing, but it's also very, very rewarding. I think it is helpful to me personally. And I think any poet probably experiences some level of that.
Do you feel like these poems are the result of free will or are they destiny?
Both. I think being a poet is kind of a calling, really. I don't know how to better describe it. How did I become a poet? Why did I become a poet? I really don't know if I could answer that, but it just happened within the context of my realities and what became some aspirations to become a writer. I've done other kinds of writing, too. I've done feature articles. I've done some short stories and some other essays and things like that. But poetry, I really am attracted to. I think it's a very, very interesting type of art form. And I think the value of poetry to me, and I agree with Thomas Merton, the famous Trappist monk and philosopher and poet, he said, art enables us to know ourselves better and to lose ourselves at the same time. If you think in terms of the value of poetry, there are aspects of that that can lead to kind of a fusion of ourselves, a better understanding of ourselves, and then a fusion with things other than ourselves, which hopefully can create personal growth.
Well, I wonder if there is a poem from the Futurama section of this collection that you might like to help us bookend this interview with.
Sure.
And before you do that, let me say, Stephen Anderson, thank you so much for sharing these poems with us and some of the story of how they came together, and I hope you come back and see us again.
Okay, thank you. All right. I'm going to read Ascent, which is from Futurama. The clarion call is out. We must dust ourselves off from the ashcans of past illusions. We can and will construct the seemingly unimaginable, just as Leonardo da Vinci dreamed of the bamboo and silk wings with which man could fly someday, just as the Dutch dreamed of and constructed a brilliant system of dikes and technical innovations to control and manage the North Sea that could have inundated their civilization forever. From the scary realm, people have, can, and will rise, emboldened with the experience of having fallen even into the deepest ashes.
Milwaukee poet Stephen Anderson reading Then the Note Faded Away from his new book, The Dream Angel Plays the Cello. He'll read more of his work Monday evening at Boswell Book Company.